session number 9253, reel 23.
Jack Dorgan, reel 23. We were talking about the officers and whether they had better conditions than the men. You've mentioned the dugouts, that the officer would have, if there were two dugouts, he'd definitely have one. Would the men get any opportunity to use the other one or any other dugouts?
No. You see, you only had a restricted area, a company, so that there wasn't much room to have a dugout. But if it was a second or third dugout in that length of trench you had, the company sergeant major would have one, or any spare officers that was attached to that company, they would have them, and all they needed to do was have blankets, would all be blankets or sandbags laid on the floor of this hole in the wall, as you might call it, and then you had a blanket hanging down, so you couldn't see who was in that there. But the officer in that, you see, he had his batman, and he used to batman.
They had batman. That would also help them to make the conditions more pleasant, would it? They're having a batman, would they do a lot of?
Oh yes, the batman did everything for them. You see. A batman, officer always had his batman, whether in the trenches or out. And the batman would see to all that, to see that his officer, if he was a good batman, he'd see to his officer was comfortable and was fed.
Now, would the food be different? Would the officer get any better food while they're in the line?
Not in the line, unless they bought it up themselves. No, but they get the first preference. If you understand, when rations were issued, the batman would be there, and he would always say that his officer and himself got a good share, what he would call a fair share. But they were first in the line. They never queued up. The batman never queued up. He went up the side. I mean, for instance, if there was, if we're out of the trench, for instance, and the cooks were issuing the breakfast, and he would be calling the fellas to come for breakfast, and we would all line up with our plate, knife and fork and mug in our hand. Officer's batman never went into queue. He went down straight around to the cooks and was served.
And
then he would come up smirking, that's the word, you know, and with their hands. Some of them wouldn't do it, but most of them would recline two plates, one for himself and one for his officer, with bacon and a couple of slices of dip. And then when we went down, we would give them the choice of dip or bacon. There wasn't enough for us, but the officer was served first, and they got what. That used to happen regularly.
So,
but we just accepted it. We couldn't make a bed of it.
Did it cause any resentment?
Oh yes, among ourselves, but we never could show it. We couldn't do anything, you see, because you're in the trenches, you're in the war. It was a war, and the officers was the officer. They were in charge.
So the officers would, in effect, have better food.
Not better food, better amount of food. Oh yes, they got first choice of everything. Oh yes.
Were there any other ways in that officers had better conditions in the trenches than men? Than men?
No, they just had the dugout. No.
Would they do any drinking in the trenches? Yes.
Well, if they had, I have no idea, but I do. I do know that in the winter of 1915 and 16, that I never came out an officer who didn't have rum in his water bottle instead of water.
But they wouldn't bring bottles of whiskey or...
Oh, no. Nothing like
so
that.
So you didn't have a problem with drunken
officers? Oh, no problems like that, no.
Did you never think of becoming or applying to become an officer yourself?
Yes.
So when was that?
When I was... After I'd been in Class W and called up again in 1918, they came around, word came around that anyone wishing could apply to have a commission, and I allowed my name to go forward. I remember that Percy Housley, a sergeant from Alnwick in Northumberland, and I were the only two for consideration the day I was requested to attend the tribunal.
We'll deal with that then. You didn't get that commission, did you?
And what happened? No.
But in 1915 and 1916, you had no particular desire to be an officer
no.
then?
No. I never had it any time. Not even then. I just allowed my name to go forward, that was all.
How did you get on with the other NCOs?
We got on champion here, one, yes. Yes, we were all very friendly, very pally, yes. I can't remember any NCO that I wasn't friendly with. Actually, at home, before we went overseas, I had a very particular pal, Mick Bell. I believe I mentioned him before. Now, when we went overseas, into trench warfare, Mick was in the signalers, and he had his own pals in the signalers. He remained a private till the end of the war, while I was a sergeant, and we moved in different circles. So I saw very little of Mick. The only time I did see him, he and his pals would be coming along when we were back out of the trenches, and they would say, Mick would say, "I'm broke. Have you any francs to spare?" Well, I didn't swear, I didn't smoke, and I didn't drink. All the money I had would be money to buy food, eggs, chips, and so on. So I always had plenty of money. So every time I saw him, I always just put my hand in my pocket and hand out 10 or 20 francs. And that's all I ever saw of Mick. But, because, you see, my pals, my friends, were sergeants, the same as myself.
How did you get on with the men then, the ordinary privates? What was your...
Well, the men, of course, all respected me as someone different to the ordinary sergeant. I always felt that, you see. When we were in the trenches, I would come along and say I wanted five men or four men to do a job. And some of the men would just turn away, knowing that I wouldn't choose them. And others would say, "Well, I'm available, Sergeant," and so on. So I always considered that I had the respect of the men from that point of view, because to go out into no man's land wasn't everybody's pigeon. It's not everybody who could go out. Some fellas couldn't go out in the dark, just ordinary civilian life in the dark, but others was quite at home. You've got to remember, too, that a lot of these fellas were from the country, north country of Northumberland, and others were miners, were used for working in the dark.
Would you talk to the men on first name terms? Were you friendly with any of them, or did you have to maintain a distance?
Well, no, I don't think so. I mean, you take a case of Billy Bacon. I found out Billy one time when I was dishing out the post, giving out the letters. I says to Private Billy Bacon, "Bill," I said, "you know, we're getting any letters." And he just turned away. big fellow he was too, real good soldier. So afterwards I said to him, Bill, what was the matter when I said you don't get any letters? Well, he says, I can't read and I can't write. I never learned at school. Well, now, from then on, I wrote for Billy Bacon. You I wrote as if it was him that was writing the letter. And the letters, when he got back, addressed to him, he used to bring it to me. And I used to read the letter to him. And then I used to answer this letter from his girlfriend. It was only one person. His mother and father were dead. And he had one brother who was always in trouble. He never came across me.
So you got to know the men quite... Did you get to know other men like that? Not writing the letters,
but... Not like that, yes. I was on very friendly terms.
And it was first name terms, was it?
A few. Not a great lot. You see, all my friends were NCOs.
What did you think of the staff and generals? Staff officers and generals and the higher ranks. You very rarely meet them. What did you think of the way they were running the war? Did you think about it at all?
No. No, I don't think we had any thoughts on that at all. I mean, we were there to do our job, whatever job it was, whether we were signalling or...
So you didn't blame them for anything that went wrong or went right?
Oh, yes, that's a soldier's privilege, isn't it? Oh, yes. Oh, we criticised many times. Oh, yes. But it made no difference.
Did you feel bitter?
The same. No, I don't think we felt bitter maybe at the time, but you had to get over it. Oh, no.
What did you think of the troops, the British soldiers who weren't the frontline troops, things like the Army Service Corps? What did you think of them?
Well, we thought they had a job to do and we just let them get on with it. I think from my point of view, personally, I had a very great respect for the stretcher bearers, ambulance men.
The Royal Army Medical Corps?
No. I never saw any of them. No, never saw Royal Army Medical Corps until I came back wounded myself.
So you mean your battalion stretcher
bearers? I mean our battalion stretcher bearers. We didn't call them ambulance men, we called them stretcher bearers because their job mainly was to carry the wounded away on the stretcher. But before they carried it away, they used their knowledge of ambulance work, first aid work, to bandage you up. And they only did bandaging you up and so on until they got you to the Royal Army Service Corps, Medical Corps, or to a doctor. But we always had a great respect for them.
I'd like now to look at what would happen when you weren't in the front line. When you were in rest or in reserve or something.
Yes, well, frontline duty seemed always to be a 4-day job, 6-day or an 8-day. I remember once, twice I think, we were 10 days in the trenches, but that didn't happen very often. Generally it was a 4-day or 6-day period that we were in the front line, and then we would come back for 2 or 3 days. There was never any stipulated time to be out on rest. We called them rest periods. And of all the rest period places where we'd stayed, Canada Huts, of course, stood out always in our minds. Because in Canada Huts, there you had a hut for 60 men, 2 big iron stoves, coal fire burning, and each man had 2 little 10-inch high trestles, and then 3 planks about 10 or 12 inches wide to form a bed. So we, 60 men could lie, 30 on one side and 30 on the other. These 2 big stoves in the middle, divided up to divide the heat. And they needed that heat in the winter of 1915 and 16. But only one door, and there was windows, how many I don't know, either side. There was a collection of equipment for keeping the place clean, brooms, heavy brooms, bushes, shovels for your coal, and so on. Dusters were supposed to be, but you never seemed to keep them. When you entered the hut, on your immediate right was partitioned off for the NCO that was in charge of the hut. That was the part I used, and that was, you had a same kind of bed as the rest of the men, but you were secluded. The doorway didn't have a door, so you could see and hear everything that was going on. But you had a small table in, and you were more or less private there, or privileged, shall I say, as an NCO in charge. So we liked to go to Canada Huts, but we didn't always get to Canada Huts. Mostly, when out of the trenches on rest, we would go to some ruined farmhouse building or chateau, quite a number of chateaus in that part of Ypres. These big houses where some rich family had lived for generations. Some of these chateaus were magnificent, little short of a castle, really. And they had quite a number of outbuildings, the chateaus. Well, they're all in ruins, all down to the first floor. Generally, any timber that had been there had been used up for firewood by the cooks. Because remember, when you went back resting, you'd be back some 6 or 8 miles, 5, 6 or 8 miles behind the trenches, so that your cooks, your battalion cooks, would light fires and just chance the odd German shell fire, which used to come over. And the officers would be billeted. The batman would say that they had the best spots behind the highest wall that was still standing. But there was always plenty of room in the outbuildings for we sergeants and men. And that's where we passed most of the time when we were back out rest.
Do you remember
the first day out on rest, we needed sleep, because remember, your sleep was very intermittent when you were in the trenches, very little hours of sleep you got. So what we were mostly in need of was sleep and some hot food, good food. And that's what we got the first day. We never bothered washing or shaving till perhaps towards the end of that first day, shaving and washing. We always did, in fact, because we seemed to always want to get out into the countryside, because up to 5 o'clock was recognized that you were off duty. And we used to go searching the countryside for the Stanima, which sold beer, because remember that Belgium, a lot of the farm people and the people of Belgium made their own beer. And there was always beer to be bought, and chips and eggs.
Before we come to the Estaminet, after you'd got this first day, you wouldn't have any duties.
But no.
During the succeeding days, would Spit and Polish return?
Oh, yes. Well, the first day we did nothing, just lounged, slept mostly, and then towards the night we roused ourselves to get, because you remember, we came out of the trenches in the hours of darkness, so it was early morning. It was morning when we came to our billet, where we were billeted at these ruined farmhouses. And then after the first day, we had to parade, shave, boots, greased, no polish then, you know, just grease.
And so they didn't bring back polishing out of the line? You didn't have to polish your buttons?
No, nothing like that. Oh, no, no. You know, no polishing, no brass. Buttons all had to be just left as they were, so there would be no shine on them. And it was general inspection to say that we were hale and hearty and so on. I can't say we did very much on when we were out resting. The only jobs we seemed to be given, which we didn't like, were when the engineers, the oil engineers, would come along, and our battalion had to provide a number of men to go up behind the front line and dig reserve trenches. That seems to be the principal idea, to go up. I remember once when we were on that job, digging trenches. I was one that was allotted the job there. And on the way up to where the oil engineers who had been there previously, they had it all taped. They stretched tape where the trench had to be dug, and they provided the shovels and picks to do the job with. When you arrived on the job, the picks and shovels were already laid out ready for you, and the oil engineer supervised, and you worked all the dark hours. Remember, you arrived there in the dark, and you worked in the dark hours, and then you had to leave before daylight come. I remember one time we went up, and when we were shelled, because as I said, the Germans always shelled the back areas behind the front line time to time, and I don't know if they knew we were there or that, but they shelled us, and we all scattered. From between 20 and 30 men and NCOs, and I was in charge of the party, and then we scattered, and then when the shelling finished, I started to collect the men together, and I found that the engineers had disappeared, and we didn't know where to go, because they were the people to guide us to where we had to go. But they scattered when we all scattered. And there was two of our fellows also missing. Three, a corporal and two men. And you couldn't make much noise, because we weren't very far from behind our own front line. So I had to give the orders to go back to where we were billeted, leaving a corporal and two men missing. So I just dismissed the men when I got back in the early hours of the morning. And the next morning I had to report to the adjutant that we hadn't fulfilled our job last night, and I had lost a corporal and two men. Oh, he picked up his ears and he says, who are they? And I told him who they were. He says, place them under arrest. So I placed them under arrest and they had to report to the orderly room, which was just a part of the farmhouse.
They'd come back on their own, had they?
I don't know where they went.
But
I came back on their own, yes. Aye, but I don't know nothing where they went, you see. Aye, they disappeared, you see. And we couldn't find them to get back, this corporal and the two. So he says, I'll have the adjutant that's sitting behind this little table. He says, I'll have the corporal in first, sergeant. So I went out and I had the corporal and two men standing. And I had an escort with me for to take the corporal in to the adjutant. And he says to this corporal, he says, what happened? And the corporal says, what, sir? And he turned to me and he says, well, sergeant, he says, you reported him as missing. I said, yes, yes. He says, I said, when I collected the men, he was missing and two men. He says, yes. He says, well, what happened, corporal? Corporal says, oh, I just followed my officer, sir. The adjutant says to me, he says, you didn't tell me the officer was missing, Dorgan. I says, that had nothing to do with me. I said, I was only the sergeant. He says, are you telling me that the officer disappeared as well? I says, yes, sir. Yes. So he says to this corporal, he says, oh, get out, get out. Now he says, come on. He says, why didn't you tell me that the officer was missing as well? Well, I said, it was no concern of mine. I says, you knew the officer was on the job. And I says, and so on, so on. He says, you should have told me. You put me in a false position. I dismiss the corporal and the two men. I had to go out and say to the corporal and the two men, I says, go on, buzz off. And that's what happened.
Did you go on any other sorts of working parties while you were at rest?
No.
Wiring parties or things like that?
No, no.
Just digging trenches.
Mm-hmm.
When you'd been on a working party, would you get overnight? Would you get the rest of the day off when you got back?
No. You went back rest, and the first day you could have it. You could say that we had it off. We did nothing. Nobody interfered with you because everybody was needing sleep and food.
I mean, when you come back off working parties, did you get the next day off?
Oh, no, you carried on as usual. Oh, no. On these working parties, you went out in the hours when darkness came at the end of the day. You went up and dug these trenches and you came back again, but you had to be on parade the next morning just the same. Oh, yes. Second day and third days. Oh, yes. You carried on as usual.